Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Panic. It crept up my spine like first rising vibes of an acid frenzy. All these horrible realities began to dawn on me. Here I was, alone in Las Vegas, completely twisted on drugs. No cash, no story for the magazine. I didn't even know who'd won the race. How would Horatio Alger have handled this situation?
All the ragmen draw circles up and down the block. I'd ask him what the matter was, but I know that he don't talk.
I want to talk first of all about what music you listen to whilst creating. I can see the records are here. I've noticed the Beatles are Hard Day's Night at the top.
Yeah, but there's a hell of a lot of others actually. And Paul Simon he used to like a lot.
Yeah, solo as opposed to Simon and him and Art.
Well, him and Art, Garfunkel, yeah. I like them. And I used to like, I've still got it actually. It's a record called... It's the trumpet voluntary. And I used to be playing, there was something collective, it was a German, and they used to, and it would always go wrong, you know.
And so then you could almost kind of create the dance around the song and
easily, yes, yeah, something like that. Yeah. And you're feeling energetic. And I'm not sure if I do. I'm trying to think where that came from now. It's like it's pulled by a horse.
This thing here?
Yeah.
This, I can't believe, isn't original.
What?
The stone. You fooled me.
Well, I think I did that.
Yeah?
And that's an old piece of a ship. You see that piece? Is the, you know, the...
This thing here, right there.
Yeah, the, what they call it? The, like the spine of it. Well, what do they call it? These.
I don't know, my nautical knowledge isn't up to scratch.
You know, well, the...
Mast.
You know, the piece... you can see the shape of a boat coming in it.
Yeah.
And that's where it's come from. So I made this.
It's a beautiful space.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, isn't it?
It is.
I like the clock. So.
Is the space itself a kind of an ongoing work of art as well for you?
Yeah, I suppose it's something like that, yes. It's. It was always... it was because I think I'm quite fond of graffiti and things, you know. So it's I liked it in drawing, you know, that way. I mean, it's long before Banksy and all that stuff.
I was going to ask, are you an admirer of Banksy's work?
I don't know. Well, it's a shame he's done some of them because some places he spoiled, some places putting it there, you know. But I thought it was quite funny that he made it into something that you couldn't avoid. It was obviously out of place. You know.
I think for him as well, perhaps for you too, it's the idea that art should say something. and it should be making a statement.
It should be noticed and
forcing people to think and
to look and see and there's an interesting Wittgenstein who said the only thing of value is a thing you cannot say, but if you can see it, wow, it makes a difference. You know, you go, you know, when you're trying to explain something, you try and draw it, and you say, oh, I see what you mean now.
I guess that's the beauty of great art. And
excuse me.
It's okay. Bless you, sir.
I like that.
It sounds good on the mics.
Yeah, good.
Music can do that too, can't it? It can put into words something which the listener can't themselves describe, but then as soon as they hear the song, they go, yes, that's exactly how I feel.
Yeah, that's right. I'll play you one of my songs in a minute on the...
I'd love to hear some, yeah.
Yeah, on my computer, yeah.
Who were the artists for you that were of early influence?
Well, obviously the Beatles were interesting, and I think Django Reinhardt. I learned guitar with the man who used to play with him.
Wow. Django was the one who had three fingers.
Two fingers. Two. Well, it was these didn't work, but those did. And it was an interesting kind of thing, but he had a fire in his caravan, you know, gypsy caravan, and it damaged those, so he had to learn to replay with two fingers. Amazing, actually.
Yeah,
and it became extraordinary.
Well, there's the story that the guitarist from Black Sabbath, Tony Iommi, had an accident in the factory he was working in, and he lost the tips of two of his fingers.
Wow.
And he gave up music, and he said, well, I can't play anymore, and his boss from the factory came round with a Django Reinhardt CD and said, if this guy can do it, you can do it. You've got an extra one.
Yeah.
And that's what inspired the whole Black Sabbath sound, is because he had to have these
good
extensions.
Name too, Black Sabbath.
But it's fantastic, isn't it?
I'll say, yeah.
Who would be the people that inspired you to draw and to paint?
André François, French cartoonist. Django, Duchamp, Picasso,
George Gross,
yeah, sorry, yeah, George Gross, and quite a few others really, but I just knew about them and looked at them a lot, and I suppose someone influencing me, and I don't think you can avoid being influenced by things you get taken interest in. I mean, books I've done, I've done pastiches of different artists. You know, when I was doing a lot of etching in Aberdeen in a Peacock Printmakers, I used to go up there once a month and create something and. You know, I'd have an edition out of it. That's how I used to like the printing, going up there every month and doing the, and getting, there was Arthur, I can't remember his second name now. But there was another one, Tony Thwaite, Anthony Thwaite, he's still there till recently, and he's just retired from it now. I don't know what he's doing. He's moved somewhere, moved up to Edinburgh for some reason. But I suppose if you're near, it's not far from Edinburgh, is it?
No.
So I don't think he was thinking of going on a world tour.
Let me ask you this, Ralph. I was fascinated by cartoons at school. And in art class, I would often draw cartoons for assignments. And there's one project I did where I tried to reimagine the work of Picasso in a cartoon style. And my teacher would say, cartoons aren't art. And she would mark me down. And so it really discouraged me from continuing down that path. And I wanted
somebody to say to me, they've actually said that to me. So, but you're not really an artist. You're only a cartoonist. So I thought, well, it's an artist, though. You have to use the line or something, you know, colour, something, to create a picture, fill a space in some way. And I guess you're being an artist. What else would you be? You know, a graffiti, Well, he could be a...
Well, it's like calling a sculptor a builder, isn't it?
Yeah, so
you're not an artist, you're a builder.
You're a builder. And it's, yeah, that's right, yeah.
If you're creating something out of nothing and saying something with that creation, then that's the definition of art, I think, isn't
it? Yeah, I suppose it is, really.
But yeah, so she discouraged me, and...
Oh, very good.
Put me off.
Yeah, it's terrible, isn't it?
Did you ever have people trying to discourage you?
Well, I was discouraged a lot, really. What I wanted to do when I was in my teens, and a little before that, you know, was to build aeroplanes, you know. And so I do model aeroplanes. I've got a couple in the back of the studio. And I eventually got an apprenticeship, 5-year apprenticeship in Chester, just outside where we lived in, you know. And after 9 months, I had to leave. I couldn't stand factory life. It was a repetition of it.
Did you find it stifling the environment?
Oh, it's awful. It's awful. So, and the other thing was that I had to go once a week to Wrexham, to the technical college there, for engineering drawing. And it was there that I picked up the straight lines and the circles, as I use them now. I still use them in drawing, because I rather like them, you know. What if I'm doing lettering? I'll sometimes do the circles for the O, you know. And
it's a major part of your style still, isn't it? Where did the splattering come from?
Clumsiness.
Really?
Yeah, so I like started accident. There and I thought, oh, no, I rather like that. Yeah. And then when you do that, after you sign your name and you go like that, it's extraordinary the little shape it makes, that I quite like that bit, you know.
Well, I was watching the For No Good Reason documentary the other night and watching the way you... hammer that ink down. Like, you've certainly got the technique down to a fine art, haven't you?
Although I have done it sometimes and bent my nib, you know, it's caught there, you know.
Have you ever gotten a picture to a point of almost completion and then
ruined it?
Have you done that?
I think I have done, actually. I spilled a bottle of dirty water,
right,
you know. And then I found that it was quite nice to do dirty water splats.
So instead of ink, use that as the basis, yeah.
And then work into that and do the picture. That's quite interesting, because you can... So many things happen as the water dries. The dirtier it is, the more, you know, and if it smells as well, it's nature doing its wonderful patterns, you know. And that let that dry. You can't paint that. It's too wonderfully natural.
And coarse and...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So that, I find, is quite interesting, doing that sort of thing. And then you can even use those atomizers and blow the ink and get a colour into that as well. So...
And were these all techniques that you picked up yourself and for experimentation?
Yeah.
And
yes.
Because it's a unique style of working, isn't it?
I suppose it is. Other people have done it, though. There are quite a few. There's a couple of them who keep setting me what they do, you know. And I think, you know, it's really like having the... being... what's the word? Stalked.
Yeah.
It's a bit like that.
You get that a lot?
No, but they're Americans, usually. And one guy's called Grant Goodwine. And the other one is, what's his name?
Joey Feldman.
What?
Joey Feldman,
yeah.
They're very nice, and they're very kind.
Yeah, he's a nice, nice fella. They're all right, they're nice fellas.
The first time you went to America, Ralph, what was the impact that the things that you saw there on you? Did it galvanise you as an artist, and did it...
Frightening, because I went round New York... We're all over from top to bottom with a little Minox camera kept here and a pocket full of quarters, so I could always give, you know, give us a dime, buddy, this is a tough city, get started. Yeah.
So you give him a dime.
Give him a dime. Take a photo. Yeah, that's right. Well, give him a quarter, you know. I thought that was decent enough. But, you know, you give him anything up to a dollar and it would be gone within an hour. They go and they'd find this place that makes cheap hooch.
Yeah, like moonshine.
Yeah. Filthy, horrible stuff, you know. And they'd be out of it in an hour, you know. Because it'd be strong, but deadly, I suppose. I mean, it's sad, really, all that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the culture shock must have been quite strong.
Yeah, well, there was a woman, there was a guy hanging on to a water hydrant in the street, you know. And then some lady said, "Why don't you get up and get a job? You're ashamed of yourself, you know." And he goes, "Oh, leave me alone, lady. Leave me alone." You know.
Zero sympathy. Yeah.
No sympathy. No. No understanding. I've got photographs of that, you know, going on.
Well, I think you struck on the nerve there, this idea of the corruption, perhaps, of the American dream, which is obviously something that yourself and your former partner in crime, were
Hunter,
definitely intrigued and inspired and interested by, right?
I think that was what the thing. But the idea was we were going to go all over America and do. We didn't never quite got to it. There was the other thing he wanted to do, was to go on the Silk Road, and do something on the Silk Road. And I didn't really know what it was all about at the time, you know. But he never got round to it. We went to Washington together, and I got photographs of him. We'd been to Hawaii, and he'd bought Hawaiian war club, you know, and he was shaking it out of Washington, you know, from up the hotel window, shouting at Washington, really, and because he hated Nixon, and he had some wonderful things. I mean, it's great moments of wherever they came from, these things like pay the ticket, pay and take the ride, which is quite an interesting one when you think that, like drugs, if you'd take, you know, and that's only ever did it once, and I never wanted to do it again, you know, the psilocybin.
Yeah, which trip was that on?
Oh, we went to Rhode Island, and we went to the America's Cup.
What, the yacht race event?
Yeah, America's Cup. And I was going to write something on the side of the book. What are you going to write, Ralph? You know. So, well, how about fuck the Pope? So, you can't say that, probably. But anyway.
You can say anything on this.
Yeah, but anyway, the thing is, said that. And then he suddenly said, this is the wonderful riposte that he gave us. Are you religious, Ralph? You know, I mean, the last thing I would be if I said that, you know, really. So it's a quite funny thing, really.
What was the nature of that relationship?
If I had written that, by the way, yeah. I'd have been in prison. I think I'd never, probably.
Still
never,
to this day.
Yeah, probably. But I mean, yeah.
What was the nature of that relationship that you shared? Was it purely creative and professional?
Well, like chalk and cheese, really.
But was there a personal friendship as
well?
Oh,
yeah, I think there was interesting because, and then he used to send me lots of fax letters because he hadn't, that's all we had them before.
Yeah, yeah, before the days of emails,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, all that. And there was we've got quite a few of them actually, the old letters that he sent. They're quite funny. This, the ugliest thing I've ever seen, get out of my house, you know, things of that kind would come through from him. And I think he liked to sort of pretend disgust, you know. He pretended to be terribly upset that you just said something that was. He did say to me once, and I feel real trapped in this life. I feel real trapped in this life, Ralph, if I didn't know I could commit suicide at any moment. He had 23 fully loaded guns in his place, and he said he'd do it. And I've got a drawing somewhere of him, me going, no, you know. And
is that how you felt when you heard the news?
Yeah, it was terrible, actually. But it was Joe Petro, from Kentucky who did ring up and say, take your phone off the hook, Hunter's just committed suicide. And there were 24 Pitkin County sheriffs in that area, you know, Pitkin County. And they all came round and stood round his body, and they all took one of his books off the shelf and all opened it at a read a page over his body. They were kind of upset about it, you know. And what's his name? God, I'm having a problem with memory. Bob Broudis. Yeah, that's it. Sage remembers. Yeah, Bob Broudis was. They were good friends, you know, because
he was a sort of figure in the community, wasn't he, by all accounts?
Yeah, oh yeah, it was absolutely amazing. And he bought the place for like $10,000 or something. This Owl Farm. Now it had 23 acres behind it as well. He was going to build some God knows what out the back, you know. It never got round to it. But he wanted to have his remains. I had to go with him to the funeral director to discuss his funeral and the upright sort of pillar that would have his remains on the top that would be then blasted out to Kingdom Come, you know.
How old was he when he went in for that meeting?
How old
was he? Did he know that death was coming?
He said he'd do it. Yeah.
Right.
And then it was about, let's see, it was back in 1972.
Oh, so he was still a young man.
Yeah, oh yeah. And he just knew he'd do it that way, you know. And
do you think he was a happy man, deep down?
Sometimes, I think, you know. But also rather aggressive, because, I mean, that's why his son, Juan, wrote a book called Stories I Tell Myself. It's a part of it that sort of, you try to write how he'd like his father to be, you know. Because he was a bit on the aggressive side, I think, with him. And I don't know, it just, the kind of attitude he had was pretty grim, really. And he tried to be a sheriff as well, you know. And the best part of that whole thing was the campaign. You know, that was quite amazing. In fact, what's his name came here?
Daniel
Watkins, and brought a whole load of pictures from that time, and I had to write on them all and put a caption on each one of them. I don't know how many there were, Sadie.
There were about 50 altogether. It felt like more, but
I think there were more. Yeah, I think.
But there's an exhibition with them at the moment in Louisville. It's nice. The Fraser History.
Yeah, it looked quite good actually.
I'll show you pictures after.
Thank you.
There's one in there actually. Look, I'll just show it to you here. If you can look. What else were we saying?
What about William Burroughs? Was he another writer that you
spent a bit of time with? Yeah, well, I did a shooting thing together. This was quite funny. It said, we took a print I'd done of Hunter, a print of him with the sheriff's badge, a Rolex watch, and between the eyes. And there was a 3-point, and he had his little gun in a leather thing. So, right, William, that's just right. I'd like it. There's three places, that's three targets you've got to hit. So, okay, it was like shaking like hell, a bit worse for wear.
A bit dope sick, was he?
Yeah, doped up. And he went like, he went, blah, 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 and he shot out the six bullets just like that. And I said, he missed. I said, I
every target. Miss.
He said, well, he's dead, isn't he? So he was dead, yeah.
What do you think it was that attracted you to these extreme characters?
I liked illustrating Alice in Wonderland, you know, through the looking glass. I was interested in Sigmund Freud and that kind of disturbance of psychological process, you know. The abnormality was quite an interesting subject, really. And I think it was peculiar. I mean, I was asked by this guy, J.C. Suarez, who was at the time, he was the art director of this magazine called Scanlan's. And Scanlan's is the name of a little known Nottingham pig farmer, and they named the magazine Scanlan's. You know,
how bizarre!
It is odd, isn't it? Yeah. And they wanted to do two things. One was to get Nixon impeached, and the second thing was to take on the dirty kitchens of New York and try and reveal, you know, to expose them. So all those things, they became interesting for me because I went to America and I was asked, I was rung up where I was staying with a friend I met at the Private Eye who was inviting me back to America. If you do come over, come and stay with Dan and with me and Pam. You know, Pam's my fiance. We're getting married and so forth. So I stayed with them for a couple of weeks before I went into New York to look for work. And that was 1970. And, well, it was just so interesting. I just knew I had to go and try my luck in America somehow, you know. It's all right doing stuff for Private Eye, but I was really getting a bit bored with it, you know.
How brilliant is it as well that, you know, I guess one of the first jobs and assignments that you get is with him, this man.
There was, how would you like to go to Kentucky? I mean, an ex-Hell's Angel who just shaved his head was what they said. So
those moments in life are so rare. It's like a Lennon and McCartney kind of friendship, isn't it? Where two people are just, I guess, creatively destined to meet.
Yeah, somehow I spit like that, you know. When he saw me, and I used to have a little beard, and just a goatee. So he said, what the hell's that? He said, you matted head geek.
Thanks, mate.
Nice to meet you. You're tall.
Did you ever talk about the vision, or did you just each individually do your respective things and they came together and it was just sort of more of a cerebral...
Because, you know, he said... They said you were weird, but not that weird, you know, with this thing. Because at the time, back then, 1970, there were very few people with beards, if any. I mean, that was an odd time. Now, everybody seems to have a beard, you know. Except me. I don't have a beard.
You've done it.
Yeah.
But this idea of Gonzo wasn't something that you formulated.
No,
so
that
much
was interesting because the guy that came up with that, we got this thing, we did this thing together where I used lipstick. What's his name? From what's the makeup people?
Revlon,
yeah. Sadie's.
She's got it. It's not her first radio, is it?
No. And. I went to have supper with them before I went off to Don Goddard was the art director at the time, and his wife was a representative for Revlon, and they invited me to supper before I went off, and I left my inks and everything in the cab, going over to their place. So that was that. So she got all these colours and eyeshadows and things like that, so I was able to use those, which was quite an interesting way of going, you know. And I thought it was interesting meeting him, as I thought of all the people in America to meet a guy like this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of weird. And
was he hard work to be around ever? Or
no,
was it...
not really, no? No. It's just that he had to have... He wouldn't get up until 3 in the afternoon, you know. And I'd go knocking on the door and he'd say, "Fuck off!" You know. And so you'd have to wait until it was time for him to get up. And I'd never been in his room when his breakfast has arrived and it's 6 Bloody Marys on a tray.
Breakfast is served, sir.
Yeah, absolutely, pretty well like that, you know.
So very much the myth was the reality. You know how people have, I guess, mythologized over
they exaggerate it, you know, and embellish it and things. But it was sometimes felt a bit worse than that, but I may have forgotten a lot of it. I let him shoot one of my artworks too, and he had a go on it, you know. And what he liked to do with it was to have my artwork hung up like that, upright. And then he'd hang my bottles of ink in front of it, mm-hmm. that, and then he'd shoot it with a gun, you know.
And add to it.
Yeah, add to it, yeah.
Was he encouraging of you when you segued into writing more in the 80s?
I think it probably helped, you know, because I started writing about what he was writing about, and or writing about what we did together, you know. And there are some... Well, I wrote... When he died, I wrote the book The Joke's Over, which is about that loss, you know. And it was really a loss. It was a pity. It's a pity he had to do that, you know, that's all. I didn't really think much of the idea, you know, of him doing that. But the... bullet hole is still through the cooker hood in the kitchen at our farm.
And it's just going to remain?
It's where it'll be, yeah. Yes, yeah. It's the sort of one result of it. Oh, very odd.
Were you at the funeral where they did the firing of the cannon and the...
Yes, we went to the to his thing. I went with everybody was there that knew him, you know.
Yeah. Did you know a lot of those guys as well through the years? People like Bill Murray and Johnny
Depp?
Oh,
yes, yeah. And I was there when they did the film with, what was his name? God, I'm having a problem. What the hell was his name?
The director.
Art director. Art Linson.
Right.
And he got Bill Murray to play Hunter in the... Have you seen the first film?
Where the Buffaloes Roam.
Yeah, Buffalo, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot more of a comic portrayal, isn't it?
Yeah, it is really, yeah.
The Fear and Loathing one, but I love both for different...
But interesting.
...different reasons.
I don't know what happened to Art Linson. I'm not sure where he is now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Was Bruce Robinson someone that you had a relationship or a friendship
with?
Oh,
yeah, well, he was keen because he came here. And he was pissed when he first arrived.
Because he was quite the hellraiser as well, right?
Yeah. And he staggered over the field. There used to be a very big tree over the other side of a horse chestnut, huge thing it was, over the other side. And he fell down on it. He looked up, but I went over to.
That was his arrival. Was
yeah,
it?
It was his arrival. Yeah. I said, well, how do you like my horse chestnut? No, how do you like my tree? He says, it's not your tree, Ralph. It's everybody's tree. Yeah, so that was funny. So,
I love the post that you did for that film. It was very in tune with the tone of that.
That was very strange, wasn't it? That was Richard E. Grant was in that, yeah.
Strangely as well, he's
Ralph
allergic
Brown,
to alcohol.
Ralph Brown.
Yeah.
He played the Camberwell Carrot.
Yeah. The Thousand Brown M&Ms.
That was a great film, that, yeah. And it was interesting to see. And D.W. Griffiths, was it? He played the.
Yeah, it's not D.W., but I do know. Lloyd?
Griffiths.
Is it Lloyd Griffiths?
Hugh Griffiths?
Richard Griffiths.
There you go.
What?
Richard Griffiths, right?
Richard Griffiths,
yeah.
Might be.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
The very chubby, charismatic
actor.
Yeah,
that's
actor,
it. Yeah, that's it. Mm. And.
Have you ever cameoed in any films?
Cameoed?
Yeah, as in made a little appearance. Other than obviously the documentary about you, have you ever turned up in a film that we don't know about?
Forgotten, actually. Done some things.
No.
Yeah, but I can't remember what now.
Tell me about your music then. Where does this love affair?
Well, it was just that I
begin.
I was living in East Ham, and his name was Alan Hodgkin, and he played with Django Reinhardt in the Hot Club of France, remember? And Stefan Rapelli was the other, he was the violinist, didn't you remember? And they used to play together in London. And then he did guitar lessons, Alan, you know, so I went to him. But he wanted to talk more about art, because I'd met him at the art classes in East Ham. So we'd do the hours-long practice. And then I'd have to write something for next week and play it, you know, something like that. So then he wanted to talk about art more than, he's more interested in that. But he was such a brilliant player, you know. And my son there, Theo, he played, he learned.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So do you play with him? Have you
no,
made
I
stuff
don't
together?
Play it. No, I wouldn't dare try. He's too good. I bought him his first guitar when he was 15, yeah.
Is singing something you've ever done on
good.
Record?
He's really good at that. Well, I'm all right at singing.
Yeah.
I can play one of my songs.
Yeah, I'd love to hear something.
Yeah, I'll do that. And we should do that first, I think. It's, I can't wait to hear myself.
Yeah, let's do it then. I'm ready. Yeah.
It's not on here.
No?
It's here.
I'll bring one of these mics through so we can record it in there.
Here we are. They're all on here. Hold on here. Right.
It's a very elaborate form of music piracy, what I'm doing now.
Oh, yeah. Wake up in your thoughts. Let's see. Oh, that's the thing. I don't monitor that. This is not me, but
I was going to say.
I was going to say no.
Casual.
Yeah. No, this is the. I think this is the one where it goes wrong.
Oh yeah, yeah. You were saying earlier on. Yeah, this is perfect painting music, isn't it?
What's that?
It's perfect painting music.
Yeah, yes it is, really.
What are the William Burroughs tracks as well? Is that you and him playing together?
What? Where?
The William Burroughs. Is that you and him playing together?
We might be talking together. Not playing. I just like this. It's so funny. It's a bomb note just playing up.
Have you seen that famous video of the orchestra where there's a man asleep and they keep going on and playing and he's sort of drifting in and out of sleep? It's so good. It's like a famous sketch.
I think I might have seen that. Anyway, that's that. It just gets worse, you know.
Love it. This is like the Bonzo Dog Doodah band of classical music,
yes,
isn't it?
Really, that's right, yeah.
So is your music available to buy?
No.
No?
I don't think so.
Huh.
Anyway, that's that. Oh no. Where are my songs here?
My day is your day. Your day is mine.
So this is you singing?
Days are no days until you are mine.
Hunter's on this too.
Is it really?
These long strange nights. These long strange nights. These long strange nights. Ooh, God. Ooh, God. Drive your stake through a dark.
The song's called Weird and Twisted Nights.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Who's playing on it with you?
A guy called Mars Williams. He plays saxophone on it. So.
I really like it. You've got to release this. You've got to put a record out.
Yeah, it's not bad, is it?
It's fantastic.
I got him on the phone.
Yeah, yeah, that's fantastic. What did you think of Johnny's portrayal of him? Did you think that he
not bad.
He nailed the essence?
A bit, not quite the voice, you know. He had a certain voice sound. I'll tell you in a minute.
I've never started an interview in one room and moved to another before. No. I love it. It's free form. I didn't even know you were still here, Gobby. Good to see you. Good work. How good is this? Yes. It's Ralph singing.
Plays again, you know, it comes on. And I said, play like the devil, just enter the church.
That's a good directional cue.
Yeah. Comes in now.
A song that was inspired by some of your nights with Hunter, was it? Was
yeah,
it?
I think
they,
so, yeah.
They never really happened anyway.
Yeah, that's
I'm
right.
Just gonna hit pause on this.
Yeah, put that. That's when I see your light. That's one of my son's songs. But what was that one of the
So you like Johnny's performance, you just didn't think he quite got the
I think
the voice
was,
just
the voice was, you know, I think I've got it. Excuse me, you Russ Hammond. You know, yeah, the way of cutting his vowels.
Like down?
Down. It was good. That's very weird, but not that weird. You know, that sort of way. Yeah. And he didn't quite get all that, I don't know what it was. But he had to live with him for a while, you know, for a few weeks, to observe him.
Like a wild animal, yeah.
Yeah.
Says she's got lunch on the table.
Oh, right.
There we go.
Just do that.
If you move it off the... Oh, there you go, you got it. This reminds me a little bit of Donovan, Season of the Witch. It's got that similar guitar line and kind of spooky quality to it. Yeah. quick question before we wrap, Ralph. Who's been your favourite president to caricature and draw, and because of the just sheer ridiculousness of their physical appearances?
I think it was Nixon, actually. Although I think... they've all been a bit interesting. The only one that was Carter. I like Carter too much to do much to him.
Yeah, to really devilise him. Yeah,
too much a nice guy.
Is he going to get in trouble if his lunch gets cold?
What?
So are you going to get in trouble if you're? Are we going to get you in trouble if your lunch gets cold? Ralph Steadman, thanks for coming on the show.
That was a pleasure. Thanks.
There was only one road back to L.A. U.S. Interstate 15. Just a flat-out high-speed burn through Baker and Barstow and Purdue. Then onto the Hollywood freeway straight into frantic oblivion. Safety. Obscurity. Just another freak in the freak kingdom. We'd gone in search of the American dream. It had been a lame fuck-around. A waste of time. There was no point in looking back. Fuck no, not today, thank you kindly. My heart was filled with joy. I felt like a monster reincarnation of Horatio Alger. A man on the move, and just sick enough to be totally confident.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.